Every year of my life, that's almost 52 years so far, the world has become a worse and worse place.
Welcome to Nature Bats Last in the Progressive Radio Network. It's NBL on PRN.FM, this April 11th, 2017 edition. Episode 104 of Nature Bats Last comes to you live from the Mud Hut in southern New Mexico and also from the Maya Mountains in Belize, as well as in Florida, in our studio in New York. Our thanks to AfroZen for his theme song contribution. We'll be taking calls. Please dial us up toll-free, 888-874-4888. That's 888-874-4888. I'm Mike Sliva. My co-host is Guy McPherson, and our guest today is Rob Simons. And Rob is 34 years old, and he lives in Safety Harbor, Florida, with his wife, dog, and cat. He grew up in the Chicagoland area as an only child to an upper-middle-class family. He was a quote-unquote bro, is the best way to describe it. He played sports in high school, joined the fraternity in college, worshipped watching sports like every other white American male is generally pressured to do. But then in 2013, part of him started dying because Obama was reelected and instantly passed a Social Security tax that saw $60 a month vanish from his paycheck. This brought him down eventually a rabbit hole, which ultimately led Rob to Mike and Guy's work, our work. And Rob heard about Guy through Michael Rupert and watched Rupert's documentary called Collapse. Then after Rob heard Guy on the Gary Null Show on PRN.FM, he also started to check out his lectures on YouTube and began to connect the dots. Welcome to Nature Bats Last, Rob.
Hello, Mike and Guy, and let me tell you what an honor it is to talk to both of you today.
Trust me, it's our pleasure. Thanks very much, Rob.
Yeah, Rob, we've really enjoyed your writing, and you've been pretty prolific of late. Let's start really with the transition between, you know, a white suburban male in, you know, middle America who starts to tackle near-term human extinction. And my guess is ultimately it had a little more to do than just losing some money in a paycheck. Maybe talk a little bit about your journey.
Absolutely. That was the breaking point for me. But there was two things that happened to me that led me to that breaking point. And the first thing that happened was when I was shortly after I was hired with the state of Florida, I had to take a 3% pay cut to pay into the pension fund. And mind you, at this time, and even now, Florida state workers are the lowest paid workers in the country. So that experience taught me that not only what government can do things that can affect people abroad, but they can affect me directly. And then really a defining moment in my life was I was assured a job with a federal agency. I mean, I was encouraged by a manager in this job to apply for the federal investigator position. I went through the process. In Florida, there was 500 people that applied. I scored number 2 out of 500, and she told me it was all but a done deal. But then that fell apart because the next phase of the process was you had to talk about the times that you experimented with marijuana, and you had to list the month and year you did. And I've only experimented with it 7 times in my life, and it had been a long time prior to 2011. And what happened was is I applied for the position as well in 2009, and they told me that the month and year that I put in 2009 didn't match the month and year that I put in 2011, and they disqualified me. I mean, an example would be they said in 2009 I said it was February 2001, but in 2011 they said it was February 2002. And mind you, I worked with this agency exclusively. So that was when I saw the hypocrisy of the United States government. And after the 2013 Social Security tax, I wanted to look into media outlets that would just tell me the truth, not the Republican side of it or the Democrat side of it, but the truth. And that's how I found PRN. And I'll never forget when I tuned into PRN on the first time, it was Gary Null was talking and he was giving a commentary about the psychopaths of Wall Street. And that's really what hooked me. And it was through PRN that I started looking into the work of Chris Hedges and Abby Martin, Utrice Lee, Derek Jensen, Dar Jamel, and I, you know, gradually to Derek Jensen and gradually to Guy, your work, and Mike, your work. And I don't think if I didn't have that gradual progression, I could have concluded what I've concluded now. I think that if I would have heard Gary Null one day, and then I would have heard Guy McPherson, Guy, you give a talk the next day. I don't know if I would have necessarily been able to grasp the concept of abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction.
Yeah, I mean, it's more like sipping instead of taking the fire hose right to the mouth and full bore. Guy, why don't you jump in here?
Yeah, that's an interesting route you took. I don't think it's unique. I think a lot of people come to our work and to this program by way of Derek Jensen, Michael Rupert, Gary Null, a few of the people you mentioned. You're quite a bit younger than we are, and in my experience when I'm on tour, when I interact with millennials, with people your age and a few years younger, it seems like you're the quickest, your generation is the quickest to come to the realization that not everything is the way it's been painted by the rosy people painting the picture and the mainstream media and the governments and so on. So can you comment a little bit on your generation with the people you spend time with their perspective to the extent that you're emblematic and representative of their perspective? And then maybe you can tell us in brief, just give us a thumbnail sketch of your article, How Near-Term Human Extinction Saved My Life. If you could hit those two things, that'd be awesome.
Sure. I think with my generation, the thing that's easy to see for those that actually want to look into it and aren't under the spell of this culture and pop culture is that I don't have it as good as my parents have it. I was told that I would, and I was told that I would have that if I was going to work hard. And I think what my generation has realized very quickly is sometimes hard work doesn't pay off, at least not financially. And people are starting to realize that. I mean, more and more people that are in my generation, I'd say, are living at home with their parents because they can't find a job, yet they just spend $100,000 to go to college. And that's supposed to be the ticket to this fabulous lifestyle, and it's not happening for a lot of people. As far as my near-term human extinction saved my life, I was sitting in bed, honestly, and I was reading some of the social media posts and the various groups, and I saw just a lot of pain and suffering and, you know, sadness. And I don't know why. I was about to go to bed, but all of a sudden it just hit me that said, you have to stay up and write this right now. And it just came out of me. And it came out of me because of the love and support that everyone in the community has given me.
Yeah,
that's great. And I agree, you know, we're in the age of contraction economically, and the promise that every generation will have it better, meaning financially, economically better than the previous generation, just doesn't hold water. I don't know how many hundred times I heard Bill Clinton say, if you work hard and play by the rules, things are going to go your way. And obviously, that's not the way it works. You can't have infinite growth on a finite planet. Rob, I'd like to bring in Serena from Western Australia, who's a few years younger than you. She's 25. But she represents a millennial perspective, and she has something to say that I think we'll end up with a question or a comment for you, if you don't mind. Is that okay with you?
Absolutely.
Okay, Serena, why don't you tell us what you got?
Hi. Thank you for taking the time to let me speak. So I'll just start. Professor, I'd like to take this privileged opportunity on behalf of young adults and students that I've spoken to. We love you. I love you. You're a blessing to us. You have liberated us from fear and confusion. You've validated what we always felt was wrong. You've set us free from the mental and spiritual shackles of dominant culture. Older generations continuously shift blame. Many have placed the enormous responsibility of planetary salvation onto our shoulders. It weighs heavily on our souls and causes students distress because nothing is changing. And I paraphrase here from a professor I once had. We are facing environmental disasters in the future, and it's up to your generation to fix it, the fix-it generation. We've grown up in the sixth mass extinction, only ever relating the Great Barrier Reef to words such as bleached and dying. They refuse to teach us with respect, teach us vital facts, encourage critical thinking, and expose human supremacy as root causes. We are demoralised and kept infantile, greenwashing our consciousness into another consumeristic way of seeing the environment. To become corporate captives, slaves to a serial killing system. The teacher-student relationship, a treasured sacred bond, intergenerational love, long respected throughout human history, has eroded into indoctrination. Between students I know, we've described it as intellectual molestation. We've been horribly lied to by our older generations, corrupted into believing human supremacy reigns supreme. Trusted educators, mentors and teachers we give our hearts and minds to, betraying us. I know students depressed and struggling against what teachers are saying and what they feel is right. There are few teachers who show virtue, fearlessness and courage. We are waking up and revolting against planetary murderers, relearning what it truly means to be a human animal, understanding her language. I've seen young members of my community stand up to authority, chain bodies to gates, locking ourselves to bulldozers, body blocking pathways to trucks, standing together united and strong, but being threatened with violence and punishment with little support from our teachers. I've witnessed incredible resistance thanks to teachers like you. Where would we be if you had never made that radical step and walked away from empire? We live to honour your example. Please feel me how much we appreciate your morals and dedication. I challenge those who persecute any teacher, first ask their students. Plato felt it perfectly. As a devoted life student of yours, I live to follow your footsteps. No judgment, no fear, no shame, only love. I live to pursue a life donating my time to non-human animals. I will embrace your message by living now, not holding on to an outcome, rather donating my life to animal welfare, showing human compassion at a time we need it most. You've made a positive impact in my life, and we live your message of excellence every moment, every day, until the end.
Thank you, Serena. Rob, do you want to have a say about that without focusing on me, obviously, but instead focusing on my message and how you know, you're 9 years older than Serena. What's your take? How do you live in light of this information and maybe expand a little bit more on that essay I mentioned earlier?
Well, Serena, what you said was so powerful. And I think one thing, like when Serena, you said that people are looking to us for the answers. I want to read a quote because I think this is the question they want us to answer as far as our generation is. The quote is, it's from Neil Everdeen, and it says, "But the question society wants answered is not how to be right, but how to be smart, how to go on doing what it has been doing without paying the price." And we can't answer that question. I think that the way I'm trying to handle it is by being a nonconformist to this culture and to living life by my own standards. And Guy, you have taught me that by listening to you talk. And if it wasn't for you, I wouldn't have come up with my life mission statement, which is I'm going to do what I can to give as many humans and non-humans the chance to live a life of excellence, even if it's for a day, week, or month.
You guys can just keep talking as far as I'm concerned. Mike, we can check out at this point. This is a great show, don't you think?
Yeah, we're looking for new hosts. So, I mean, sincerely, both of you have expressed, Rob in your writing and Serena with, what you've just said, the depth of what you've expressed over the Serena just recently is remarkable, because to go there at your age, Guy and I aren't ancient, but to be young and to accept some of these things is, on some level, I got to think, a more devastating because, you know, Guy and I have lived a life where we've made a lot of choices and decisions without these things in mind, and we've had that privilege of doing these things and not having the weight of abrupt climate change, near-term human extinction, the collapse of civilization on our shoulders. And if, you know, you're a young person and you're looking to start a life and start a family and, you know, go through the process of, you know, what we consider life to be, and then this is thrown on you, it's a different animal than it is for Guy and I on some level. So I appreciate you both sharing your thoughts and your heart and your emotions, because as we all know, this is not easy. Thank you.
Yeah, this is emotionally difficult terrain. And Mike, you and I aren't ancient, but I have Paul Marcotte here with me. And speaking of ancient, and I'd like to ask Paul. Paul has been on the show a few times before. He's a good friend of mine. He's visiting for a few more days. And Paul, you talk about 3 days. Can you talk to us about your 3-day perspective on life as you view it today?
I'll try. I'm kind of almost ready to start crying from what Serena just said, so I'll try and get through this. But yeah, it's you know, with all the information that's out there, it's amazing that we're alive for another day. And so I just have been thinking for quite some time now that if I just have another 3 days to live, I'll be, you know, content with that. And that I suppose that helps me focus more and more on the moment and not get too worried about what's going on, you know, farther down the track, which you don't have any control over. So, yeah, I guess that's what I'd like to say. And hi to Mike as well.
Well, that's excellent advice, because, you know, Rob and I have talked, and Guy and I have talked, and actually Paul and I as well, including Kevin and that, we all tend to get fixated up on the doom and gloom, and then we forget about actually going outside and living our lives. And I think that's sound advice. 3 days, because, you know, we might not get tomorrow, so.
No. Right. You're never guaranteed another day. You're never guaranteed another hour, for that matter. And I like Paul's perspective. He gets up in the morning and he says, if I have 3 days from here, it won't be so bad. If I have 3 days, stretch this thing out a little bit longer. And, you know, there's lots of things that can happen in 3 days. It's approximately that long. If there's a disruption in the supply chain before the grocery stores run out of food, that's about a 3-day inventory in the grocery store. 3 days is about as long as people can live without water. 3 days, or in my case, 3 hours, makes one very uncomfortable without food. So there's all kinds of interesting issues that come up at the 3-day mark. So I have great respect for that 3-day mark that you posit each day, Paul.
Thank you. If there's one thing I could add, just as a little bit of advice, just thinking more about what Serena said, I think one of the things that we appreciate, us as far as me and Serena go, is Guy and you and Mike, you both have bared your soul to us, and you can't put a monetary value on that. People see the genuine, authentic people that you are. And that's why I see the emotion that Serena had when she read that essay that she wrote, or that letter that she wrote. And people don't do that nowadays. It's all about conforming to a system. And you guys have not done that. And we appreciate that. And I would encourage whoever's listening to this to do the same, because the amount of love that you could receive back, the amount of love I've received back is sometimes very overwhelming and emotional. And it makes me not regret doing what I've done, as far as get a little personal about my life in my blog or just talking with you guys right now.
You know, and that's one way that we can define our humanity, is in the expression of our emotions. We sometimes forget that. We generally, within the dominant culture anyway, think that expressing our emotions is problematic, or, you know, we hear frequently, big boys don't cry, go to your room if you're going to express those sort of emotions. And I think that those emotions define us. And yet, because we're so afflicted with the dominant paradigm. When Serena is reading and she starts to get choked up, she feels like there's something wrong with that. And so that's why I keep hammering home to people, no blame, no guilt, only love. And it's a huge step when you grow up in this dominant culture, not nearly as big a step for Rob and Serena, 34 and 25 years old, as it is for ancient people like Paul and I, but still pretty significant when you're inculcated into this culture.
Absolutely. I mean, Rob, you mentioned your blog, and, you know, I do some writing, and Guy does some writing as well, and we've both admitted that it's therapeutic. It sounds like moving forward, your blog is therapeutic for yourself. Can you talk about that and maybe some of the responses you've received from it?
Absolutely. First, you know, it's a tribute to you and Guy and Kevin Hester and Forrest Palmer and all the other people that I've encountered in my life who have touched my life. But what made me want to write was when Donald Trump decided to go through with the North Dakota Access Pipeline. It was a couple days after that I met with some of the Red Warrior tribe, and hearing their story about living in Standing Rock for 2 or 3 months and deeply affected me. And I knew walking out of that meeting that I had to write about it. And it's the first time I ever felt that way, but I had to do it my way. And what I would say as far as my way is that I'm an investigator, right? So as an investigator, you are trained to, when you interview a subject, you save that subject interview for last because you gather all the information on the allegations and you find out what the true narrative of that story is. So when you sit down with the subject, you first build a rapport or establish a rapport with them to make them feel comfortable. Then you let them tell their story or their narrative and you lock them into that narrative. And once you find out that that narrative is a lie or there's lies in the narrative, it is your time to expose those lies. And you chip away at it. So at some point, they feel defeated and they accept your narrative. And I try to do the exact same thing when I'm writing. I try to build a rapport with whoever's reading the blog. So that way, I do that by bearing my soul to the reader. So that way, maybe on some level, we can relate. And then the second thing is I don't try to expose or I don't look at them as like they're subject of an investigation necessarily, but I try to write in a way that lets them know, you know what, maybe some of the stories I've been told about this culture, how the way the world works is bullshit. And I can at least, if I can get them to think one thing that they were lied to about one thing, then in my hopes, I can funnel them to some of the great thinkers and people, you know, in this world. So I try to be kind of like the point person for you guys or Derek Jensen or whoever else. And as far as the responses I've received, like I said, it's been overwhelming. I can't believe that people would actually read this first off. And just the love and support that I've gotten back has been very emotional for me. And it makes me realize that I'm supposed to be doing this right now.
I mean, so with that being said, how about the response from, you know, people you know in your personal life, your parents, your wife, friends, people on the job? Do people read it that are close to you? And if so, how do you navigate through, you know, their responses?
Well, before I started writing, they knew my feelings about the consequences or the scale of abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction. There's no way that I could ever be my inauthentic self around the people that I'm closest with or spend the most time with. And the amazing thing about it is, while I don't know if they all don't necessarily agree with me or they'd all even want to think about it, they respect what I'm saying because they know by living, I'm an investigator. And part of my job as being an investigator is to research something exhaustively and come to a conclusion. And that's what I feel like I've done with abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction.
I mean, I'll tell you, it helped me personally that somebody that has a job like yourself, because I am not necessarily a trained investigator. It's just another little, I guess, support system knowing that someone like you has come to these conclusions. Because, you know, if you think about these things long enough, and Guy can attest to this as well as anyone, you start to think you're getting a little batshit crazy because there are very few people, obviously, who have the time and energy to, one, think about these things, and then, two, go deep enough to come to some of these conclusions. And so I think it, for you, it seems like your job has really become helpful in supporting the conclusions that you've come to. And I got to tell you, it's good news for me as well. So thank you.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with that. When you're ahead of the wave crashes over you, and it's not a good feeling. When you're riding the wave, that's when you feel good. And it seems like with people like you, Rob, coming to the fore and expressing positive sentiments in response to our writing and our speaking and our own conclusions that this thing is a complete clusterfuck. And you know, there's not a lot of people who want to hear that, much less promulgate that message. And so when we get some sort of affirmation, like we all seek validation, affirmation in our lives, it's, dare I say, uplifting, given the topic.
Well, I think, too, that people also, regardless of what you're writing about or speaking about, I learned this the hard way. People want to hear, so what do I do now? And I don't say that as far as like offering a solution or some kind of hopium to what is occurring. I say it as, here's options you have moving forward. Here's how to deal with this. And I learned this when in my town, Safety Harbor, I gave a 6-minute scathing speech about some people in this town. And I called them vulture capitalists, right? And I went into all these things, and I quoted you guy at the end with your famous quote of, if the environment's more important than the economy, try holding your breath while counting your money. But I never, ever said, so what are we going to do about it? And I learned from that. So I try to do things like that in my blog, but that doesn't mean I think that we're somehow going to get out of this predicament.
Yeah, I mean, so let's talk about that as far as your personal, you know, journey as far as accepting near-term human extinction. Because, you know, you and I have talked back and forth a little bit about how, you know, you can get to acceptance, but that doesn't mean you don't go back to bargaining and denial at times in the scale of grief. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Absolutely. And I think that's something that people don't understand when you're dealing with the grief of abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction, is that while you may eventually hit acceptance, you still experience all the other stages simultaneously. And for me, the two big ones, honestly, are anger and bargaining. And while I've accepted what's going to happen to me, I feel anger towards what's going to happen to the things in life that I love the most. And that's what gets me writing. It gets me going out and marching and protesting. It lets me release that anger. And then I bargain when I hear the news and I hear how things are getting worse. I mean, I can think of a time when at the beginning of March, the WWF came out with some statistic or study that said that they believe a little over 17,000 species this year have gone extinct. And I averaged what would be the average amount per day from the day they reported that. And it's on average 360 species a day. So when I think about that, I instantly bargain for more time for them and more time to help them.
Yeah. I mean,
wow.
That number's higher
than... You do have a caller.
That higher than number,
ahead,
that
Mike,
number's
sorry.
Higher than anything we always say, usually, Guy, isn't it?
Right. I have always taken a relatively conservative approach. So when I hear numbers like 360 species per day compared to the 150 to 200 that the United Nations reported in August 2010, I'm not surprised, because it's been 7 years, and it's the United Nations. So, of course, it's worse than I'm pointing out.
Good point.
We have a caller, Kevin from New Zealand. I think we were just talking about you. Are you still on the line with us?
Kia ora from New Zealand, from the middle of a howling gale on Rakino Island. Lovely to hear you all speaking. There are two things that I wanted to talk about, and both of them have come up, so I think it shows how relevant it is to all of us. The first one is how Rob and Serena have both said about how positive this message is. people think that because we've accepted near-term human extinction and the severity of the crisis, that we're all doom and gloom. But far from it. We are really much more liberated and much more engaged in our lives as a result of it. So that's one of the things I wanted to say. And the second one that you've already brought up is about species and extinction. When Guy and I speak publicly, we always quote the UN figures that you just mentioned now of 150 to 200 species a day going extinct. But National Geographic posted an article in 2011, and the title was 86% of Earth's species still unknown. The reality is that it's probably at least 20 times worse than Guy and I have been saying.
Wow.
Wow.
It's not very often you get someone says, oh, Guy McPherson's understating the severity of the crisis.
Yeah, that's great. That's right. Rob, can you comment on the positive response and the positive emotions that you have felt in light of what is supposed to be a strictly gloom and doom perspective and a gloom and doom message? Can you talk a little bit about that?
I think it's just, you know, people just sending me a quick note of thank you. I needed that. I needed to read that. And you're right, you know, on anything that I have tried to talk about, just any kind of validation I've got or somebody just making them feel better in the moment has been great. And I hope that if somebody reads anything or any of my work or either of your work or Kevin's, that they get out and do something. And I don't mean something dramatic. I mean, just enjoy nature. Be with it. Be with what we have while we have it. And that's all I'm trying to push people to do, because my fear is like what you all are saying is my fear is that somebody is going to just sit behind a computer all their life and they're going to analyze each news article and they're going to just keep saying how screwed we really are. And they're not, and they're going to forget about that there's a living world out there right now. Even though it's starting to vanish, it's still here.
I think that's great advice, because even if this is, you know, Guy has said this and Kevin has said this so long, even if it's not going to happen, let's just say near-term human extinction and abrupt climate change are something that are, you know, we're all nuts. There is no guarantee, we've always said this, for tomorrow. No one here gets out alive. So I think, you know, getting out there and actually living, getting out from behind the computer, like you've just mentioned, and not being so concerned with making a living all the time. It doesn't mean you can't have a job, but you should have a balance in your life where the job isn't your identity. And, you know, be out there with friends, family, nature, and live your life. And I think that's what's been lost. And maybe this message, of, if anything else, is waking us up to the fact that the way we're living our lives, you know, we're generally wage slaves, indentured to debt, and that's what we do. And we buy the time by just trying to make it to the next weekend or the next paycheck or the next vacation. And so I think your writing has really kind of opened that up for a lot of folks that, yeah, you can work, but there are other things that are vastly more important.
And I totally agree with you, and that's what I try to get people to do is find out what their true life's work is. Because if it's you going to that job every day and that's what does it for you, I think you're going to be disappointed in life and you're going to have regrets. So I just hope, if anything, that people live a life with no regrets.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think for me, at least, when I came across Guy's work and Derek Jensen's work and Daniel Quinn, for me, it was just a wake-up call to reevaluate what I was doing. And I thought I was living life, you know, the way I wanted to. But once I started to explore some of the things that I was doing personally and started to self-reflect, I started to really search for other ways to find meaning and to find happiness and to find contentment. And, you know, I ended up in a yurt in New Mexico. That doesn't mean everybody has to. You could end up doing a lot of different things, like, you know, you've pointed out. Just getting outside would be a good first step. So let's talk a little bit about where you may see yourself going evolutionary-wise as a person. You know, because things change, as we all know. That's the only thing that we can count on is impermanence. So how flexible are you in your personal life at the moment where you think, you know, I can let this go if I need to?
Well, I think a lot of that and what people may be interested in is when it comes to my personal life, I'll talk about my wife and I's dynamic, because my wife doesn't believe in near-term human extinction. First, like me and my wife, the way we met is we met in college and we were friends in college. We were dating other people at the time that we met. And then outside of college, when college was over, we rekindled that friendship and we started a relationship. And that helped us build a great foundation. And rather than focus on that difference between me and my wife, we focus on all the similarities we have. And there's a lot. I mean, we both love to help people. We both love nature. We love non-humans. We believe in climate change. We both believe in taking care of our mind, our body, and our soul. And we have strong relationships with our parents. And I think that's what keeps our relationship strong. But at the same time, my wife knows that I need an outlet to deal with abrupt climate change and near-term human extinction. And she lets me have that. And I also never lose sight of all the compromises my wife has made in her life for me and our marriage. I think that's important to keep that in the back of your mind. If you're in a relationship with somebody that they don't necessarily believe in what you believe in.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. You know, the struggle with people we talk to on this show is often the relationships that we have, whether it's a spouse or a sibling or parents or so on, and really not letting that divisiveness of I believe this, you don't believe that, get in the way. My situation is similar to yours. It's slightly different. My wife does accept near-term human extinction, but I don't necessarily think, you know, my friends and family all buy into it. But like you mentioned earlier, I think you know, the way that we've dealt with one another through our lives and the respect that we've had from one another, and we have had healthy, functional relationships, has gone a long way in preserving what we have despite, you know, some of the dire things that I happen to see coming and they may not. So I appreciate that you're sharing that, because I think that's sound advice for all the doomers out there who, you know, are listening to this show and following Guy's work and, you know, and commenting on all the quote-unquote doomer pages, is to keep in mind, to try and find a way to preserve those relationships, because, you know, that's really all we have. Guy, you around?
Yes. I was hoping nobody would rein me into that conversation, given the recent relationships in my life. Thanks a lot for bringing that up.
No, I was because you said you had a sketchy signal for a while, so.
Yes. And you thought I was talking about the internet, didn't you? Let's move on. Let's wrap up here with Rob and move on to a 1979 singer, songwriter, and one of his songs. Mike, do you want to wrap us up with Rob and move us along?
Rob, real quick before we go, talk to me briefly about what you got coming up, what you maybe your next piece with the blog, and what you're excited about.
Well, I don't really know what my next thing will be. I just put out something about I had to take a personality test, a True Colors personality test, that I extrapolated that to try and go into what I think the personality of the people that work in the upper echelons of the United States federal government is. And really, I think part of me still living in industrial civilization gets me to write about things like that. So I don't try and sit down and think of the next idea. I just let it come to me. But, you know, as far as the group that I'm in, we're a revolutionary group, the Revolutionary Caucus of Tampa Bay. We have a Facebook page. And one of the things we're doing is we're starting a community garden in South St. Pete, because South St. Pete has become a food desert. And there is a lot of people that are poor and don't have the affordability to get food. So some people that I'm working with have opened up a garden to help feed these people. So And they're doing a garden at this place called My Place in Recovery. And it's a halfway house for homeless people. So if you're interested in donating, you can go to myplaceinrecovery.com and check out a little bit more of what we're doing.
Great, great. Thank you very much for that, Rob. I very much appreciate the time to talk with you today and for the message you're carrying and also for the relationships that you're holding together independent of your different beliefs. So thank you very much for the opportunity to chat today.
Thank you both. It's been such an honor to talk to two of my mentors.
We appreciate it. And I think people could take sound advice, you know, that you're doing something really to alleviate suffering. And, you know, and that's really what we can do. If people are looking to start and they want to feel like they can contribute, take Rob's advice and get out there and do something that can alleviate suffering in not only your own life, but other people's lives. So thanks, Rob. And we look forward to following you.
Get out there in the world. Get out there in nature. Yeah. We still got it.
All right, that was Rob Simetz. He's a friend of the show, writer for Moving Forward blog, which he shares on my wall, Kevin's wall, and the NBL walls and all the Doomer walls. I would highly recommend reading his work. It's insightful, it's well written, and it really cuts to the chase. Right now, we seem to be getting some songs in, and we have another Doomer song from an MBL listener, John Reynolds, and I believe John wrote and played on this song, and it's titled The End of the World. So let's take a listen.
That 3.5-minute song is from John Reynolds, It's called The End of the World. It's on SoundCloud, and it's from, wait for it, 1979. When I was 19 years old, I was not thinking about The End of the World. I don't know about you, Mike. You must have been about 12 at that point.
Yeah, I mean, that's incredible that song, and actually what's interesting about it is it sounds like a song that could be released today. It doesn't sound dated at all. And topically, it's obviously, it's right on, but to think that somebody wrote that song almost 40 years ago, John, that's mind-blowing.
Indeed. And songs like this are coming out more and more all the time. Whenever I write an essay for the blog now, I try to embed a song. And I have a difficult time, even though I don't follow music at all, I have a difficult time distinguishing between all the, quote, doomer songs that are out there these days.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, over time, over this show, over the 100 and some episodes we've had a few songs now. I encourage people, it doesn't necessarily have to be about the end of the world, but if it's commenting on things we discussed on the show, whether it's climate change or civilization itself or being a wage slave, I encourage you to send those in and we can discuss them, because a lot of great art out there. And I don't know if you watched the video, Guy, that was sent by our guest from, I think it was last month, wasn't it?
That's right, Steph.
Yeah, Steph had she sent a 13-minute video and kind of talking about what her and her partner are doing these days and showing us a little bit of their lives to me, Guy, and Kevin. And she said her songs, since she's started to come across Guy's work, have become, shockingly, more sarcastic.
Humor comes in many forms. We can laugh or we can cry. Or, like,
or
me,
we can
do both of them all the time.
And I'm always impressed with musicians, I mean, or poets, or any sort of artist that can take the things that we talk about and put them in some other, you know, other format other than us just blabbing about it and make some art out of things that are difficult to deal with and not only talk about but think about. And some of these folks, like John here, are way, way ahead of their time.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I mean, this art in its mirror is another one of those things that defines us, defines our humanity, like emotions. Emotions and art which encourages us to express our emotions, are, I believe, emblematic of humanity. And if they're found in other organisms, I doubt they're expressed in quite the same way, quite as incredibly loud and close to our own faces, in our faces, as art is. I mean, that's what art does for us.
Absolutely.
It brings out what is truly human.
Are you broadcasting from a tree?
Yes. Yes, actually, I am. I'm here at the Maya Mountain Lodge in Santa Elena, Belize, and it's an open air facility. So there's actually a whole bunch. I'm surrounded by jungle right now and the noises of the jungle. And actually, this is how I spend most of my day, is in a similar environment surrounded by the jungle. Wow. And the birds are everywhere. They're squeaking and squawking. And the howler monkeys lately have been just roaring pretty much 24/7.
Yeah, that's
amazing.
One thing I remember about being in Nicaragua is the howler monkeys. And I was on a zip line and they were throwing their poop at me.
And you deserve it.
I did. I slept in the trees with them.
Right. They got us outnumbered.
Why don't you talk a little bit about your upcoming tours?
Yeah, I have a couple of tours coming up that have been wrapped into one tour at this point. I'll be in the San Francisco Bay Area late this month. You can read all this at the coming events tab at the blog, GuyMcPherson.com. So the 27th, I'll be kicking off that tour with the East Bay Sierra Club meeting. East Bay meaning East San Francisco Bay Area. So that'll be in Berkeley with a dinner. And more details will be posted at the blog shortly. And there's another event. There's an expo. a living expo that follows, I think, 3 days later, I think on the 30th. Again, more details to follow. You'll need tickets for the dinner, and I think it's restricted to the first 115 people or something like that. So as soon as I get that posted, you might want to stay tuned. And then I go from there to Missouri. The 1st through 8th of May, I'll be in Missouri because Missouri loves company, apparently. So I'll be touring there for a week. Okay. And spending time with our friend, Gaio Smith, on Facebook and social media, as some people know him. So I'll be spending a day or two with him as well.
Right. Very cool. Yeah. Are you going throughout the state of Missouri? Or are you in generally a specific city? Or?
Well, I'll be in Columbia and St. Louis. I'll be centered in a little town called Hammond, and that's where I'll be staying. Be plenty of time for informal events, and I've been contacted by a few people already. When can I see you? What's going on? Can we have dinner? Blah, blah, blah. So keep all those coming, and there will be plenty of time for informal events in and around Hammond. And then I think there are four formal presentation kinds of things already arranged: St. Louis, Columbia, and a couple of others, and they're all in the blog again. So it looks like a good time, and it's interesting. My host there, Stephanie Hibden, has been trying for a couple of years to get me to come speak, and she'll get it all worked out, and then local support will fall through. And so good for her persistence, and Missouri is finally ready for the message. I'm finding that increasingly, of course, that as the evidence accumulates, as more people are actually looking outside and seeing what's going on to the living planet, that my message has become more welcome over time. Of course, right at the end. Yay.
I think, maybe your host, if she hasn't already, there's a fair amount of intentional communities like East Wind and Dancing Rabbit within Missouri. And if those folks have Facebook pages, she may want to drop, some of that information on there. And because I visited Dancing Rabbit, there were a fair amount of folks there who followed your work, so they may be interested as well in coming down to talk.
That's an excellent point. I'll do that, and let's encourage our listeners, if you're listening to this right now, you can post about that tour. Go to the blog, look at the coming events, copy-paste to all those Facebook groups you're a part of, and make it an even bigger party than it already is.
Well, anything else before we wrap up this week?
Well, another thing to keep in mind is that I'm heavily censored on Facebook. So if other people will share the message, they can join the club and become censored as well. So why not want to do that?
I will. I'll see if I can locate some of those pages myself, and we'll put the info. Maybe send me an email with some of the details, or I can put it on there, or share them. I'll share them as well.
Yeah, if you just share the coming events tab with other people, that includes everything I know, and it's rapidly changing, especially the San Francisco Bay Area tour. The dates, places, and full information are being developed in a phone call right after I get off the air with you. So stay tuned.
Okay, well, that about wraps it up this week. Make sure to like our Facebook page, Nature Bats Last, and the Progressive Radio Network, or join our Facebook group as well. It's Nature Bats Last on PRN.FM. Feel free to post questions you'd like us to address on the show. Please continue to follow Guy's blog at GuyMcPherson.com for further updates, essays, and speaking tours. And remember, Guy will be in San Francisco later this month and calling in early May in Missouri. Our next show will be around May 2nd, it looks like, which is 3 weeks away, a little shorter distance. Please find him on tour, and you can find me at the Good Men Project. You can get my book, Chasing a Different Carrot, and I'm also going to put a little YouTube channel together probably between now and the next show, and maybe that's something we can talk about next time. We'll see you on the radio May 2nd, 2017. If you missed the show, make sure to find us in the archives at PRN.FM and rate us on iTunes. Thanks again to our listeners, to Aprazin for his music, for Rob Simons for his contribution, for Serena for her words of wisdom, and for Paul for talking with us as well. Until next time, remember, the dominant culture has been very clever, but in the end, Guy, cue the music.
Ta-da.
heaven.